Now, Tiny, what was his trade? Was he also a rigger?
He was a rigger. Yes, mm-hmm. It was. It'd be about 4'6", mm-hmm. Saxon, fair skin, blue eyes, fair hair, and he was a gentleman. He was polite, and he was ready to talk about his own family and where he lived. He lived at Beeston, somewhere near Nottingham, I think. But yes, we got on well together, but he used me for protection.
And the other man you talked to him, Ron Wilcox, was he a rigger as well?
Yes, he was, yes. And but he was a much coarser person. So I didn't really... I did what I was requested to do, and that was got him to float. Now, he didn't take up much swimming at all, but Tiny did. He used to come with me.
You mentioned in February 1942, at one point, you were room orderly. What did that entail doing if you were made room orderly? What were the duties?
Well, there'd be... be about 20 of us now. This is going back to Chibnar.
Ah.
We did it occasionally. Sorry, it isn't Chibnar, it's Gibraltar.
Yes.
The whole idea was to tidy up the beds, and most of the beds were tidy already, but there could be a spot inspection by a sergeant, and an officer would come walking around. And so basically it was to sweep out, clean everything up, make sure it looked reasonably clean. It wasn't a stringent check, but it took most of the morning to do this. And I didn't find it onerous, I found it a complete change. And so it was... I didn't resist anybody, but they said, will you do the orderly?
Did it come round regularly?
No. It would be about... 30 or 40 in this combined accommodation that we were sleeping in, and it's it's like two there per bunk arrangement. So there's quite a lot of bunk beds there. Mm. And so it wasn't regular. It was just hit and miss.
And were you taken off normal?
Oh, yes, completely. Yes, it was the equivalent of a day off, really, because most of the activities was done before 12 o'clock. You only went back after lunch if there was something pressing that you hadn't completed. And to work on an aircraft when the sun was getting onto it was blistering hot, and you found that you couldn't do it. And so it was a question, get your work done as early as you possibly could. And when you finished it, then there was no demand for you to do any more.
Well, that is the normal tropical routine, isn't it? You get up as early as possible.
Yes.
And you get all the physical work done as soon as you can.
Yes.
Because you can't when the sun is really up.
I'm sure we were starting something like about 7 in the morning. And there'd be a break in mid-morning for a cup of tea. You used to get the naffy wagon come round. That was it.
Another thing you mentioned is the news of the first daylight raid on Berlin.
Yes.
And the effect that had on you. What's your thoughts about that?
When we first got to Gibraltar, there was no radio or anything in the huts. But they now started to try and do more for the for us, and they fitted tannoy, and so the tannoy was able to give us limited periods of Gibraltar broadcasts. Now it wasn't on all the time because it would encourage people to be in the accommodation, and so it was only at certain times, but we used to get the news, and I used to listen to this. And when it was announced that there'd been a 1,000 bomber raid on Germany, and in particular Berlin, then the the uproar that you heard from, and I mean all the voices, because the tannoy was throughout the whole of the rock, and so you had a sudden roar of hooray sort of business. And this is because we knew full well that we'd had to suffer this sort of thing up to about 3 years now. It's getting on that way. And we saw that as retaliation. I'm sure we did. And we thought, well, they deserve what they've got. And it wasn't just a question that against the services, because the civilians were fully supportive to the idea of military action. And so, it was a marvellous flip. It changed our whole attitude, because up to then, we had our backs against the wall, and we were doing things that we knew we wanted to do, we had to do it, we were defending ourselves. Now it was apparent that we were taking the war to them and not being the recipient.
So that changed the mood?
Entirely. And so it wasn't apparent, but it made us feel a lot happier. And I think, of course, particularly of Hull, because we knew what sort of raids they had. And I gradually, I think from what I've heard since, that they gradually faded off.
Now, at the time, were you aware of the overall development of the air strategy that was going on?
Nothing.
You weren't?
We weren't told anything. The early years, you see, were not reported. Mm. We didn't get papers. We didn't get... we hadn't a radio. So there was... You were in the dark. Right. For a very long period, at least I was. Other people might have had opportunities, but I didn't. And this, as I say, it was when we just nicely got the tannoy in, we started getting some information, and we heard that.
I was thinking about what sorts of information you might have had, and one source is the newspapers you had from home. Did you have any newspapers on the rock?
No. Well, if there were any, I never attempted to get them. And the weekly paper that my mother sent was mainly family news and things like that. It wasn't so much about... Well, there's very little written about the war itself, so you got no idea if they'd been bombed or anything like that.
And did you manage to get access at any stage to BBC broadcasts?
I think what was happening is that there was a listening station at Gibraltar, and you got the announcements via the... there would be some broadcast group there, and they were well spoken, so it was just like an extension of the BBC, but I don't think it was the BBC direct.
So it was a rebroadcast service.
It was a rebroadcast, or probably a filtered one.
But you've also mentioned at one point about Lord Haw Haw. Did you hear any of his...
No. No, I didn't. I heard a little bit when I... Where did I hear it? I can't answer that.
Okay.
Yeah. I wasn't aware that I heard it in any of the service areas.
Perhaps you just heard about it.
Probably so. And I've had many records since, of course.
Another thing that you mention is a visit from King Peter of Yugoslavia.
Ah, now that was one of the biggest embarrassments I ever had. And I told a pack of lies from the very outset. And it went something like this. A young man, and he looked very immature, about 18 years old, in civvy clothes, and I was working on the dinghies at the time. In fact, I'd already done one, and I'd started to work on making it for myself, a small suitcase. and it was made out of beech wood that I'd reclaimed from the Spitfires that were being built up at the frontier.
What was the crates they'd been shipped in?
Yes, rubbish from the crates.
Yeah.
And there was plenty of, waste wood then.
You
and
said
it was
very
beautiful
early on,
wood,
you,
so you, I then started to make a suitcase
yeah.
for when I came home. Back to King Peter. This young man come in, and without any introduction or anything, there's no one with him, and he started asking questions. And, you know, what's this for? How do you use that? And then from the very outset, I started telling him pack of lies. I thought, now, if this is a civilian, he shouldn't be here. He shouldn't be knowing anything about it. So I turned to the German. I had a German dinghy there, and it was built like roughly like a boat. And it was inflated, and it had paddles, it had a mast and everything. So I started praising the German setup, and I said, well, they can row, you know, in different directions and things like that, and use their sails. I said, far better than this sort of thing, and I was decrying what we had. Now, I had a J-type dinghy blown up as well, and I just simply said, well, if you get into that, you're going to get... stay where you are, and if nobody picks you up, you're in trouble. And there you are. So that was his part.
Now, where had you got the German dinghy from?
It was brought to me by the Navy.
Oh.
It had been collected, and they thought I might be able to use it. But of course, there was no means of using it, and nobody wanted to use it for playing around with, so it just sat there.
And what did you think of it as a dinghy?
No, it was a good idea. But for anybody that was, say, several hundred miles away from a coastline, then unless you had everything in your favour, you weren't going to travel very far in a short time. And therefore, I think basically that the idea of using the drag pockets and putting out the sea anchor from the J-type dinghy and keep the aircraft and the dinghy as close together as possible, put out your fluorescent deposit into the sea, and then you'd get this stream of light, and then either the Navy would be sent in that area, or they would send out an aircraft and do a replica run over that and report. And if they found the dinghy, then they would inform the Navy, and it would be a high-speed boat would go and pick them up. And that's it.
And so King Peter was just wandered up to you when you were working, and you told him...
Yes.
Gave him false opinions on the J-type and the German dinghy.
Well, all he did was kept asking questions. And because I thought he was illegal, I thought he was, he was trying to glean something from me, and I was telling him everything in the opposite. Now, it barely got out of the place and moved on somewhere. When all the big brass come in, I've never seen so many high authority people as plenty of caps with eggshell on it, as we were. And then they started asking me, well, what sort of questions did he ask? So I then proceeded to tell them a completely different story. I told them that how good our equipment was now. We've got an example of the German one and how they hoped, oh dear me. And it wasn't until everything had quietened down that I was told who it had been.
Who told you?
Oh, just hearsay. It got round the our colleagues, and they started to ask, well, what went on? I didn't tell them.
And you mentioned in the narrative Group Captain Carey was part of this party of senior officers. Do you remember anything about him?
Yes. well, do you want me to go through an accident?
I think we might do that later.
Right.
That comes later, doesn't it, when the aircraft collapsed.
Yes. No, I don't think there's... He was a very austere man.
Had you seen him before, close to?
Only once. And this was when it wasn't in any area at all. But I was told that's who it was, but I wasn't close enough to pass any comment at all. No. No, the main contact was when that accident happened.
And then the Air Officer Command in Gibraltar, I think, was there as well. Do you remember anything much about him?